Welcome to our discussion about reliability in Wi-Fi networks. I'm Joni Wexler, an independent analyst and editor, and I was the primary author of WebTorial's recent Wireless LAN State of the Market report. I'm here today with G.T. Hill, Technical Marketing Director at Ruckus Wireless. Ruckus is a Wi-Fi network maker, and Ruckus sponsored this year's Wireless LAN State of the Market report. Welcome, G.T.
Thank you.
We decided to talk today about one aspect of Wi-Fi, reliability, because our report research indicated that enterprises consider reliability to be the most important attribute of a wireless LAN. For example, reliability was cited by nearly two-thirds of WebTorial's survey respondents as being a critical wireless LAN attribute. Yet, only 17% said they were extremely satisfied, when asked, with this attribute of their Wi-Fi networks. So I wanted to explore this discrepancy a little bit and share opinions among us as to what's perhaps going on in the market today. So GT, first, could we define reliability in a way that might be agreeable to most people? Does reliability mean, for example, that a connection is simply always live, regardless of how much capacity it's providing? Or what would be your take on how to define reliability?
Yeah, first and foremost, the connection has to be live all the time, everywhere the user expects it.
Okay.
The bandwidth and quality is, of course, of equal importance, but that changes or is different per application. If the design was for just email and internet access, then that's what the end user expects. But if it's, you know, for a wired Ethernet replacement, then, of course, that bandwidth and quality of that connection will be different for that environment.
So it sounds like you're saying reliability from the user's perspective is what they're accustomed to for an application to work well all the time.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, it has to work all the time, but we can't, in the industry, we can't say, well, reliability means that they get 2 megs of throughput or 4 megs of throughput, because that a wireless network has to be designed based on those needs.
Okay, great. So what are the components in a wireless LAN system that actually contribute to reliability? There's probably a number of them, and some maybe even out of the hands of the wireless LAN systems maker itself.
Well, some important things, you know, that always come up is proper design, proper architecture, you know, what the management tools are. But personally, I believe that it's all about the physical layer. I had a guy tell me once, way back when, that 80% of all network problems are at the physical layer, and this was pre-Wi-Fi. And today, I would expect that number with Wi-Fi problems is much higher. I mean, 90%+ of problems are probably at the RF layer.
Okay, so when you say RF layer or physical layer, what kind of problems are we talking about?
Well, radio frequency is a wonderful thing that allows us for mobility and to talk on our cell phones, but the problem is that there's multiple factors that come into play. Number one, the simple one is, do we have enough signal? With the wired environment, as long as the wire ended up at your desk, for the most part, you had signal. But, you know, just having enough signal, dealing with interference from other devices, dealing with obstructions, dealing with changes in the environment, all play a big factor in that.
And when you say design, you mentioned design as part of the picture. Are we talking about the design of the wireless LAN that the vendor creates, or the design within the enterprise of where access points are placed, et cetera?
Proper design is important in both aspects, both from the vendor's perspective and the implementation. Some of the best products out there, if they're deployed improperly, are not going to function well.
If deployed improperly, can you give me an example of what you mean by that?
An interesting trend in the beginning of Wi-Fi was, you know, it was all about coverage, making sure we had coverage everywhere. And as Wi-Fi picked up in popularity, we needed more access points. So over the trend of the last 10 years, we've seen, you know, more and more access points with, you know, microcell architecture and more access points. But one thing that's happened that's interesting is a deployment problem today is actually oversaturation of access points. What that problem arises is that there's too much RF. These access points actually interfere with each other. In fact, one thing that I say to a lot of people I talk to is in a typical Wi-Fi network, the actual biggest source of interference is their own Wi-Fi network.
Now, what about some of these RF tools that are out to help alleviate that and detect sources of interference and perhaps even change channels of one particular client? Are those sufficient?
They help significantly.
Mm-hmm.
A big problem is, of course, the, you know, site surveys are mandatory, which, you know, employs using those tools to properly design the Wi-Fi network. And I'm not a big fan of going out there saying, oh, you don't need a site survey. I think they always have to be done in some respect, even if from the simplest network to the most complex. The tools definitely help. Now, you mentioned two sets of tools. One is sort of doing the site survey tools. And then there's tools afterwards, which are, you know, many vendors have automatic channel selection and automatic power changes to accommodate the network. The problem with those is that I believe that they're overused, that some of the taglines are, you know, don't do a site survey, just blanket with APs, and we will, you know, fix it in the controller or in our architecture. And I just don't agree with that mentality.
And why is that?
That it's too difficult to, it's just very, very difficult for a device to properly design a network. Number one, the biggest problem, one major problem, is that the oversaturation of APs requires these access points to reduce their transmit power, and that's very normal and very common. The problem with that is that even at the lowest power output of your normal vendor, the RF still travels in an omnidirectional way, and it actually travels very far. Even at, say, 1 milliwatt of transmit power, it goes very far, and what happens is that causes co-channel interference with other access points, and unfortunately can be it can cost money and reduce performance.
So what might be some solutions? I mean, one solution one might argue would be to do a kind of use a wireless LAN architecture perhaps that uses the single channel, single cell architecture, which would not allow competing access points to interfere with one another. What do you think about that versus some other method of getting at the co-channel interference issue?
Yeah, single channel architecture actually deals with this fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is everybody's on one channel and the controller has ultimate control of what devices transmit where. As a practice, single channel architecture definitely has some interesting things to talk about, but I don't know that that gives us a good excuse for not doing a good site survey. If I had my way, if somebody had a single channel architecture, I would still say that they should do a site survey and not just rely on the system to compensate for what ultimately would be bad design.
And you're talking about a physical site survey when you advocate site surveys, right?
Absolutely. In some way, whether it's predictive modeling or in my opinion, I think site surveys should encompass a significant portion of the time on site where the deployment will occur.
And what about any quality of service tools that are out there? Some of them are baked into the Wi-Fi standard. Some of them are enhancements that go above and beyond the standard. Do those help?
We're talking about reliability here. So in an environment that Wi-Fi is, a shared MAC environment, that these, you know, quality of service is very important. The downside is there's only, it depends on the type of traffic, of course, but different vendors do go above and beyond for how to coordinate traffic. Of course, WMM helped us quite a lot, but, you know, every vendor's got their spin on that, and those definitely can help with reliability, especially considering with more voice and more video occurring all the time.
well, what else is there? What about, we haven't talked about antennas yet. I know that's something that your company is very big on, and I don't hear a whole lot of vendors actually talking about advances in antenna design. And I wanted to ask you about that. Are the antennas just sort of an afterthought of these systems, or are they critical to how well the system as a whole performs?
Well, Ruckus, we 100% believe that the antennas are a huge factor. Other vendors, you know, their antenna designers may be outsourced, or they may be, you know, buy antennas off the shelf, if you will. But Ruckus got its core start believing that antenna design, the management of the physical layer, is you have to start there. I mean, good quality of service and good layer two technologies and protocols will help, but really in the end, management of RF, which starts at the antenna, is very important to us, and that's what we believe gives us our competitive edge and why we can pull the performance numbers that we can.
So does the antenna component play a role in trying to get wired-like reliability in a shared MAC environment like Wi-Fi? I mean, is it even possible to get such reliability in this kind of shared environment?
Yeah, reliability, I think it is possible. Now, reliability and performance, ultimate performance, are two different things.
Right.
Reliability, as we talked about earlier, you know, we kind of defined that a little bit ago. But can we get wired-like speeds? No, we're not doing gigabit, you know, performance yet. But as far as reliability, absolutely. So let's look at the wire for a minute. Why do we like the wire so much? Because it carries signal from point A to point B down that wire or fiber, whatever it may be, without, you know, anybody bothering it. It just goes down that particular medium, and it gets there. The, you know, radio frequency inherently doesn't do that. With an omnidirectional antenna, it goes effectively everywhere. You know, across a plane, it goes everywhere. And where we're at, where Ruckus is thinking is that we don't want it to go where it doesn't need to go. That causes multiple problems.
What kinds of problems does that cause?
Well, number one, the main goal I think that anybody would want is always more signal. And more signal is not always just because of range. You know, range is great to have, but we want more signal to our stations to get higher data rates. The more signal we get, the cleaner that signal is, the higher the data rate is for that end device. So if we could take all the energy that's in an omnidirectional antenna and focus it, which is what Ruckus's technology does, focuses it in the direction of the client, then we're accomplishing actually two things. Number one, we're getting more signal. But our antennas actually act like a dynamic directional antenna. So the other neat thing is you get is interference mitigation. So if I'm transmitting more one direction, I'm also going to listen for the acknowledgement in that direction also, which makes me be able to hear that station better as well.
So when your antennas focus most of their energy toward the client at hand, so to speak, how does it continue? How do they continue to do that when the client is actually moving?
Yeah, that's great. So our antennas, let's just take our 7962 product. It's got 19 different antenna elements on it, and the designers of this system actually built in this software logic that says, well, what of those 19 elements should I be using at this point? And those are a combination of different polarity elements and different directional elements. So what happens, Joni, let's say, you know, you're connected to a Ruckus access point, but you're walking down the hall.
Right.
What happens is on a packet-by-packet basis, the access point is actually listening to your acknowledgments. And it may say, well, that acknowledgment didn't come back quite as strong as it did last time. And just for that microsecond, it will try another packet out of another array of antennas. And it learns very, very quickly. Again, we're talking, you know, millionths of a second level as to which sets of antennas to use and it will adjust that based on the movement of a station. And this, it keeps a little log in its brain. It says, all right, Joni is over here, Bill is over here, and it memorizes and knows which set of arrays should be used for every packet.
Okay, so you mentioned arrays of antennas. Does that mean if I buy a Ruckus access point, I've got bazillions of antennas in my device all showing, or is this more of a software intelligence thing?
Great question. It's if you pop the cap off of the top of our access point, you'll actually see the antennas. We don't have a bunch of omnidirectional antennas sticking out like most vendors. Ours are all built into a printed circuit board of sorts, and they kind of stand up, you know, an inch and a half with inside our box. So ours are very antenna-based, meaning it's a physical set of antennas, and depending on the product, up to 19 different antenna elements. But we also have a software component to control that antenna. The antenna alone, you could not, you know, we don't sell antennas. You can't take the antenna and put it on another vendor's access point. The key to it is having the antennas with the control of which elements of that antenna to use at any particular time.
So your access points, then, are far from the old definition of a controller-based setup where we talked about dumb APs or very thin APs. Sounds like your APs themselves are very intelligent.
They are intelligent on multiple layers. Where most vendors concentrate on the intelligence at layer two, we have a set of intelligence on the access point at layer one, the physical layer, the RF layer, mm-hmm. that the controller doesn't involve itself in. And, I mean, for channel changes it does, or for changing power levels it can. But the reason we decided to do that is keep it all in the AP is because we don't want any lag time between the access point and the controller causing this thought process to slow us down. So all that super fancy antenna intelligence, it's all built into the access point. And there's no configuration of that either. There's no, you know, you don't have to be an RF genius. It's just there. That's just how it works.
Excellent. Okay, I think what you might have been alluding to in discussion of your intelligent antenna array might have to do with the term beamforming, which some of us have heard. Particularly as 802.11n becomes kind of the mainstream access point technology that people are investing in going forward. We know that beamforming is an optional component to the 11n standard, but I don't believe that technology is the same as your beamforming. And I was wondering if you could maybe clear up a little bit the various kinds of beamforming that there are and kind of, you know, compare and contrast how they work and their trade-offs.
Yeah, great. People have been doing beamforming ever since the beginning of Wi-Fi. A Pringles can antenna is a beamform, right? It's just what we call a static beamform. A directional antenna forms a beam, mm-hmm. and that's what it does. So the first type of beamforming is called static beamforming.
Okay.
Anytime you've ever used a directional antenna, that is called a static beamform. You know, with virtually every vendor, you can do that. You can put an external antenna on there to form a beam. The upside is that gives you gain in one particular area. You have better transmit, better listen data rates in one area. The downside is that it's only for that area. So we can get better signal down a hallway using that technology, but it can't change based on the environment. It can't change based on someone's movement. Or interestingly, even on the rotation of a laptop, for example, can affect signal, and static beamforming can't accommodate that. There's also two other types of beamforming.
Sure.
One is transmit beamforming, which is chip-based. The only vendor to do this so far is Cisco. I think they believe they call that their client link technology.
Mm-hmm.
The way that works is they have omnidirectional antennas on their unit, three at this point. And what it does, it's really neat technology. It actually will know, Joni, that you're over where you're at. And we're going to transmit signals from those antennas at different, you know, time differences. So when they get to you with all the multipath in the area, they're going to be reflected and perfectly in phase when they get to you. And you can get about 3 to 4 decibels on the max side of gain by doing that. The downside is, coming right from Cisco's tech, is that that only works with legacy devices, that they are actually not using that as an 802.11n technology. It's a bit of a complicated topic, but you can't use spatial multiplexing, which is one of the huge things that 11n uses to get all its speed. You can't use client link technology or this transmit beamforming and spatial multiplexing at the same time. So it's either more gain or with for legacy devices or more throughput for your 11N.
One or the other.
Exactly.
Yeah, I see. And in the two types we've described so far, static and transmit beamforming, do I need the technology both on access point and client or on one side only or whatever?
Oh, good question. On both of these technologies, they are, this client doesn't have to have any more brain. You know, it's just more signal from the AP to the end device, and there's no compatibility issues with that. So they both static and transmit beamforming that's chip-based can work with legacy devices.
Okay. And the type of beamforming that Ruckus does is dynamic beamforming?
Correct. So we call it dynamic beamforming, and this uses both antenna technology and chip-based thought processes and computations to do it. So I mentioned before that one of our antennas has 19 different antenna elements. If you got a chance to look at one of those, you'd see that there's just a whole bunch of little tiny antennas in about a 4-inch, you know, round circle space. So what this does is it uses multiple antennas and the chip logic to transmit a signal in a particular area. So what it actually does is it creates a one-time directional antenna. So if I'm trying to transmit to a particular client, I will transmit with that antenna or a set of antennas based on the environment. So, you know, we can transmit both vertically and horizontally polarized simultaneously or one or the other, depending on what is best for the station. The next packet out to a station on a different area will use a completely different set of our antenna array, part of our array.
It's a packet-by-packet decision.
Exactly.
So as the client is moving, I might have a temporary, in a way, I could think of it as a static directional antenna for that moment in time, and then moves ever so slightly to the left or right as another directional antenna, and then an ever-shifting directional antenna on a packet-by-packet basis.
Absolutely. So the upside of that is, number one, we get more gain. We get more like static antenna, or I should say static beamforming style gain. It shifts, of course, according to the environment, but we get about 9 dBs of gain on the transmit side. But again, the big piece for us is, yes, we get more signal to the client, which means more data rate, you know, or higher data rate, better throughput. But the key is we go back to this RF management. The problem that we have as a company with omnidirectional antennas is that they transmit where they're not needed. That
right.
causes more interference.
Interference, yeah.
So when we transmit a particular area, part of the key to think about is where we're not transmitting. So if you think of multiple access points in a building where they're just transmitting in omnidirectional ways, ours are transmitting effectively only where they need to go. Less RF other places means better throughput for our neighbors as well, our neighboring access points.
Okay, and just to make sure that I'm fully understanding, the beamforming that is actually an option to the 802.11n standard, which we know was ratified last September, does that fall into one of these categories of beamforming that we've already discussed, or is that yet another bucket?
Well, I don't know that we have that totally defined yet, as no one's done it yet. Ruckus has been doing this technology for the last 5-6 years before 11N, you know, was even close to ratification.
Mm-hmm.
So, and ours is fully backwards compatible with, you know, everything as well as the other two we mentioned. The eventual goal for transmit beamforming with the, as 11N states it, is we will also have that on the client. So the client device will actually be able to form a beam, not with our style antenna array, but using the technology of of changing the phase of the signal to get more signal from the station to the client, or I'm sorry, from the station to the AP. Unfortunately, there's none that I know of that are close to even doing that yet.
Which do you expect to come first, the access point side or the client side, or will each side wait for the other to get started and kind of create sort of a chicken and egg situation?
Well, I think with us doing our dynamic beamforming for 6 years and now Cisco coming out and validating that by saying that, hey, we have a transmit beamforming technology with their omnidirectional antennas, that I think the AP side is where it's at, because that's what's of most control. You know, the major vendors can control that. And most traffic in most networks, even a complete voice network, the access point is transmitting 50% of the data. And realistically, that number is most traffic, 80% or so, is downlink. So the main advantages we're going to see is downlink traffic, which means the access points will be who's getting it first.
Okay, it looks like we're about time for us to wrap up. GT, I just wanted to end with any advice you might have for enterprises out there looking to increase the reliability of their wireless LANs. Any tips that you might want to offer from your side?
Sure. Just keep in mind it's always about managing the RF. It's some of the biggest problems out there are just oversaturation of access points, signal going where it doesn't need to go, overpowering, and it's always about control of that signal. And that's the number one thing. Once that problem is solved, the rest of it starts to very much fall in line. Just start at the bottom layer and move on up.
Okay, great. Thanks so much for your thought leadership today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Joni.
And thanks to our listeners.